What's up, guys, and welcome to APSU Studio here on the campus of Austin Peay. We're just gonna go straight into it because we're a little short on time, but we got the strong safety for the Governors, Isaiah Norman, here as the Governors picked up a win on the road against Sacramento State. The score was 42-28. I'm gonna take it away. It's Patton Cook, Gabe Jones. Patton, go ahead and ask your first question.
Yeah, Isaiah, in OVC, you guys faced some really strong opposition on the offensive end, Jacksonville State, even TSU, not the best team record, but offensively they were really good. How do you think that helped you guys coming into a big game? On paper, there's a strong offense in Sacramento State.
I think the Furman game prepared us for every type of offense, because with that triple option, like, we face spread, we face heavy run, and with triple option, it's a mixture of, like, it's not a mixture of both, but they can get you. And so, like, our defense this year, has main focus has been discipline. Our eyes are disciplined. Our technique is disciplined. We have to stay disciplined. That's the key why we stay number one. That's why we're number one in OVC.
Right.
We're fast. Family always stays together. We play together.
Let's go. So how was that San Francisco weather? Is that your first time being out there on the West Coast?
San Francisco, Sacramento.
San Francisco, Sacramento.
Apologies to the state of California.
The Sacramento weather was very warm, actually.
Yeah.
As soon as I get out the bus, it smelled different. Like, it smelled like the West Coast.
Ah.
And like, I was like, okay. And then the clouds started coming, like, oh, it's gonna rain. And it started pouring down, but the game, actually, it was supposed to rain all game, but it didn't, and I'm so glad it didn't.
I gotta ask you first off, because before you got on the plane, you was going, he was joking on the Gov's Twitter, and he was like, oh, I'm not gonna get on a plane. Yeah. Why are you gonna play for the camera?
All right, first of all, the only time I've been on a plane when I was small, and I don't remember, so I don't count that. So this is my first time really being on a plane, and like, it was a life-changing experience for me personally. The takeoff was amazing. The landing was frightening, but so I was okay.
The landing was worse than the takeoff.
Most definitely.
So, moving forward, you gotta prepare yourself.
I'm just gonna go to sleep when we land.
Yeah, like you were prepared for Mr. Kevin Thompson. What was he? He was the player of the year.
He was the SoCon player of the year.
Well, he definitely didn't look like it, throwing 21 for 53 in the game. He had 300 yards, but they were some garbage yards, though. He got one on you. Well, tell me about that play. Take me through that fourth quarter play.
What happened was it was at the goal line, Sacramento State was, and Thompson threw a pass in Isaiah's direction. Unfortunately, it didn't go in his favor, and that was a touchdown scored on him. So, Gabe, just ask.
This my homie.
It's just because we're close with Isaiah, so.
Yeah, man, it's cool. I was going to hear it anyway. So, I wasn't disciplined on that one play. The thing about a cornerback, the one play, you're not disciplined. Boom, they can get you. And like that's one thing that's hard, that's different from corner and safety. Cause the safety, you know, you can, if you get beat, maybe they don't see it. At corner, they all of a sudden just always see it. And like, I got beat off the line and they threw a fade ball. It was a good ball, good catch. I tried to get it out and I didn't get it out. So you best believe next time he's not catching that on me again though.
Well,
I'm not going.
It's not gonna be a next time though, cause the Hornets did get eliminated from playoff contention. And one thing I gotta say about your secondary and just the defense in general, 3 of 14 on third down. There's no way you
can
win
football right there.
You can't win a football game 3 of 14 on third down, and you gotta give kudos to your defense.
Yes, sir.
And I gotta say, because you know you was on the backside, y'all was getting a lot of pressure up front in that front seven. How could you just commend those guys?
Man, like I said on the podcast, man, if you have a front seven, you can win a championship. If you have a ferocious D-line that can get to that quarterback, you guys saw the look on his eyes. The camera zoomed in on his eyes, and he was looking frightened out there. That's how he was playing. He was missing throws. He wasn't on rhythm. And our front seven does a fabulous job. We have the mixture of speed, power, finesse. We have it all on that D-line, man, and we have depth. And that, you know, most teams don't have depth at the D-line position, so that's a major plus for our defense, and they're a major major reason and a key why we're so good.
This question was asked to both Javon and your head coach, Coach Hudspeth. Did you guys, as a defense as a whole, did you envision that fast start offensively through that first half? You really kind of took their will out. Is that kind of what you wanted to do coming into it?
That's what we want to do coming into every game. We want to come into every game. Our motto is, if they don't score, they don't win. So.
Hey, that's the rule of football.
Yeah, it is. So if our offense scores 3 points, if they don't score, they don't win. So we'll win 3-0. So, like, you know, for us, we don't think about what the offense – we try not to think about what the offense does. We just try not to get frustrated, you know, when they're struggling, because if they don't score, they don't win. So all we have to do is go out there and keep getting stops like we always do. That's our number one motto, and that's how we just go about it. And our offense just came out slinging on all cylinders, really. We were like, this, you know, this is number four. Okay.
They was saying four seed in the playoff. They was number three in all of FCS. But the Govs just get it done in a dominating fashion. The score was 42-28. They're moving on to Montana State. Mm-hmm. Now I got to ask you, because – Montana State, they have some pretty solid receivers. Mm-hmm. And you guys got the confidence now, really, as y'all secondary. How do you like that matchup heading into Saturday?
I like every matchup going into any Saturday with my secondary, man. It's just our mentality. We take the mentality of our coach. You know, he's a gorilla. Gorilla's not scared of nothing. So, like, we don't care if, you know, King Kong come and I'm a regular size gorilla, we finna jack, you know. Like, we gonna show you what's up, man. You know, kudos to their receiver, we give respect to them. You know, they're pretty good, but I feel like we're better. So, and we're gonna see this Saturday.
I will say, if you get three first downs, if Montana State gets three first downs, I have a really good shot of you guys winning. Now, one thing I also wanna ask is that you gotta switch from the mm-hmm. West Coast. Yeah, it's going to be a little cold. I know Patton was talking about it before. It's going to be a little cold.
A little frosty.
It might be a little bit of snow as well. How you going to try to prepare yourself from that change? Because in the West Coast, it was warm. Down here, it's a little chilly. Mm-hmm. And then up north, it's extremely cold. You got to prepare yourself. How do you think you're going
to
prepare yourself?
I feel like Clarksville, Tennessee is like the perfect place to get you ready for any weather. Because we get snow, we will get rain, it'll be cold. It'll rain for like a whole month straight. Like, I've never been in a city that does that. Like, I call this the rainforest of America. And like, we're used to the cold. You know, Carsville is pretty cold. So like, you know, it's been like 15 some degrees here before. We've been out practicing. We were actually prepared for this moment. Like, during Matt Drill's off-season training, we was outside in the snow doing up-downs and running stadiums. Like, in the deep snow playing tug of war, like, so like Coach Hill has prepared us mentally and physically, I feel like, for the weather. And weather is just a mentally thing, man. Once you get out there and start running, your body starts to warm up and you don't feel a thing, really.
Yeah, well, you're going to feel something after that adrenaline come down off those hard hits.
Oh, yeah, definitely, the day after.
Like, the people don't just see those hard hits and be like, oh, no, that's just nothing. Come on now.
Them day after.
Especially
pains.
After a hard hit, like you when you're trying to come down on a running back, you know you be trying to lay the hammer down. But don't tell the listeners and the viewers that, oh, that ain't nothing. Come on.
I'm telling y'all, when y'all get out there and start running, you don't feel a thing until Sunday.
On the plane back too.
Yeah. Oh boy, that hurt bad.
So, what was the most enjoyable part? Was it getting there? Was it laying the smackdown in the first quarter, or was it, you know, leaving with victory, knowing that you're going to see another week?
The food. The victory was very sweet, because we've always been doubted everywhere we went. We're always the underdogs. We're always doubted, and that's what fuels our team. And I see that's how we play. Like, people say that's how we play. That's how we look on television. Like, we look hungry. We look like we have something to prove, and that's how we play every day. That's how we go out to practice every day. We come out with the same energy and the same effort. And the best moment of that California trip was walking out that field, bumping that California music with a dub. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I know it was a good feeling. Now you headed to Montana State. That game, also a late game, but it will be on ESPN3. So you got to tune in. Any listener, any viewer, go ahead, go tune in on this great matchup against Montana State. We're going to send it to a quick break because I know he got stuff. Wait, go ahead.
Quick question. If Montana State was watching, you had anything to say to Montana State, what would you say?
Get your mind right and strap your helmet up pretty tight. It's finna get wild, man. It's finna get wild.
Oh, that's a perfect way to end it right there. So we're going to send it to a break. We'll be right back here with more on Just Talking Sports. Welcome back, folks. This is Just Talking Sports here. We got a special announcement, guys, because We are officially on Spotify. You can check us out at Just Talking Sports. We got episodes uploaded for you guys. So big accomplishment. You should check us out. We are also on YouTube with APSU TV, as you stated right there. But also you could check us out on Spotify, which is something that it's pretty remarkable. But we're gonna continue on after Isaiah, he had to leave, had team meetings and more stuff to prepare for Saturday against Montana State. But we're gonna focus a little bit more on Sacramento State, because it was a pretty dominant win and something that really the OVC wasn't really prepared for. Nobody really seen Austin Peay just coming out of nowhere. And now they have 11 wins in the season. That's most in the school history.
Does anybody remember Austin Peay's preseason rank?
They were selected either fourth or fifth in the OVC, but in terms of national ranking, they were nowhere near it. It took them forever to even get in. Once they beat Jacksonville State, they didn't even get in then. It's once they beat SEMO, which looking back at it is just laughable that Jacksonville State was in the top 15 for so long.
You do have a fair point. Jacksonville State was in it for quite some time, and they didn't play really good football at all. It seemed like after that first loss to Austin Peay,
it derailed them.
Their season went downhill. And the only team that you had to really look out for was SEMO, and SEMO was ranked higher than Austin Peay. So the FCS didn't really have a lot of confidence, even though it didn't help them out that they did lose to Central Arkansas, who was a really good team, who was actually seeded number 8 in the FCS playoff. But the ETSU loss, and then once you got to the top 25, losing to TSU was just like the FCS wasn't really sold on.
Right, and two things, and for South Carolina's, or JSU rather, my biggest thing coming into the season was it was all mental. No team had really saw that they could knock down Jacksonville State off the OVC. SEMO, even though they beat him, Jacksonville State ended up winning the OVC for a tiebreaker. So once Austin Peay kind of knocked them off, hit him with that jolt, punched him in the mouth, it kind of put doubt in their minds. And that's all, I think, what sports is. It's all mental, from basketball to football. If you believe in yourself, more than likely you're going to end up winning the ball game. And that was the whole thing with Jacksonville State.
That's something that Isaiah had just stated earlier, too. It's a mental thing, because you could, playing football, it's always physicality. You're going to think physicality the most. But that mental side and that one mental lapse, as he stated earlier, it caused your demise, and it seemed like they was feeling like the pit bull OVC coming through. And then afterwards, it was just like maybe like a little chihuahua at the end of the season. Now other teams are like, okay, these guys not what they used to be.
And to be fair to the FCS rankings, I wasn't so sure that they were going to knock off Jacksonville State. That first game they had, I was thinking – they'd be lucky just to come out with a close loss. I just didn't see them able to knock it off, especially after the ETSU loss. No one really could have predicted it, but once Austin Peay kind of found that, they dialed in. And once they got dialed in, no team other than kind of a weird TSU kicking debacle, other than that, they've been great. They've been great down the stretch.
Indeed, our defense, like they say, defense travels. Our defense has played pretty solid to immaculate all year, especially early in the game. I mean, it gets a little weird late in the game, but sometimes it's because we're winning by like 20 points. Right. We're up 3 scores.
First team in the OVC for sure. And even I'll say this too, even with folks in the FCS, they still, even coming into the playoff after their first win, Austin Peay, people was like, okay, they got a good win. It was a solid win at home against Furman, you know.
And they were underdogs coming into Sacramento State.
And it was just like, okay, we know that Sacramento State is a really good team. They have them really high ranked. They're number 3 in the FCS. They're ranked number 4 in the FCS playoff. It's going to be a tough way to come out. And then Austin Peay goes 21-0 in the first quarter.
Man, smacked them right in the mouth. I turned on the – let's see. I was talking to my buddy, Marcus. I had to get his information so I could watch the game. And I turned it on. It's like, a few minutes into the game, they already scored. 4 minutes into the game, we already scored.
That was D'Angelo Wilson with that first score. And then
– and then a quick 3 and out.
Actually, it was the Hornets. Yes, it was.
Yeah, a quick 3 and out, 3 plays.
Their first 4 possessions, actually – was all three and outs. The defense came and just stopped everything. It wasn't no ifs, ands, or buts. It was just, all right, we're going to put our foot down. Can y'all get past the 50-yard line? Plain and simple. That's how it was. And the defense stepped up. And then Javon Craig, being Javon Craig, what would you say?
Man, that's OVC Lamar, boy. OVC Lamar.
OVC Lamar Jackson, as Gabe was saying. Lamar. As Javon was just lights out once again. He didn't have to do a lot, really, because there was a quick strike. But Nico Harley, that's one person that came and was just, he just went for a check, just plain and simple, whether it was receiving the ball, running the ball. He actually was almost one of the leaders on the ground. Javon was as
even
well.
Even had a completion over in there.
And the scary thing about this game was that Javon didn't even play his best ball.
That's the thing.
He was missing close passes, but when it counted in the red zone, he was hitting them. And that D'Angelo Wilson first touchdown, it's one of the better routes you're going to see, not only in college football, but there's a lot of guys in the NFL who couldn't dream of running a route like that, a double move inside, then out. It's really fun to watch some of these playmakers for Austin Peay. Kentel didn't play that much. That's just kind of the scary thing.
Because
they're not riding their star guys really that much.
Kentel was first team all OVC. Javon was first team all OVC. It was the other guys that came
right,
and stepped
right.
up. But Nico Harley, he wasn't even selected on the all OVC team.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Wilson, just me personally, I think he got snubbed.
Should have
didn't make it?
No, he made the second team all OVC, but I think he should have got first team.
Absolutely.
He had the better numbers. We're not going to say the person's name but he played for JSU who had...
It's just empty stats. That's what that is. That's empty stats that meant nothing. And D'Angelo Wilson, rather, his yards, they counted. Every single yard was so key for this team and Austin Peay to win the OVC. So, to me, I just didn't see how... If you're going to give Javon the first team, I believe he was first team quarterback,
yes,
you got to give his best weapon the first team a receiver
That's
spot.
That's the thing, though, Patton, because Wilson had more receptions, Wilson had more yards, and more touchdowns.
And you still see that kind of hate us. They still don't like Austin Peay, and they're kind of the underdogs. And as we just talked with Isaiah, they don't mind it. They don't mind playing the underdog role, and they come into each and every game. I don't know how many games they were favored in this season, but they've been nearly perfect when they're the underdog.
It was just a dominant affair by the Governors throughout the whole game. As I stated earlier with the talk with Isaiah, three conversions on third down. Two of them was in the first half. So in the second half, we only had one conversion on third down.
And to be fair, they didn't have the ball that long at all because you had the Austin Peay onside kick up, I think 21-0 they were up, and they ended up going with the onside kick. So that just shows – these players love playing for Coach Hudd because he's an aggressive coach that trusts his players and trusts to make the big play, and they've been making the big play mostly all season.
The time of possession was Austin Peay, 38 minutes to 15 seconds, to Sacramento State's 21 minutes and 45 seconds. It's not much you can do if you're not converting on third down and you don't have a time of possession in your favor.
Absolutely.
One thing that I still don't like, I didn't want to say it in front of Isaiah but he would be on board with me, is the penalties. Though that's the one thing that I know Coach Hudd has been focusing in on, but you got to be more disciplined.
And at some point, that's been their identity. Most of the season is kind of take these silly fouls, and at some point, you're just going to have to write those in. Those are going to be the penalties they're going to have, and at this point, I doubt you're going to take them away. But if they could, that's just how much even more dangerous they could be is – they didn't play their best ball, and they were still blowing out Sacramento State. So just kind of scary hours for some of the other FCS teams, but there's that always kind of thing in their mind, are they going to make a boneheaded penalty?
Because those bonehead penalties can cost you.
Absolutely.
Especially, I think what Austin Peay is that they make these silly penalties on simple mental laps, and also when they have these big leads, some would get the big head sometimes where he's just like, yeah, I know we up three scores, so I might get beat on this play. I'm going to just grab and hold on for a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Because, I don't want to give up this big play because I know coach is going to get on me after the game is over with. But, we're up three scores. We up big. But you just got to be more disciplined, be more
fundamental football team. That's one thing about North Dakota State that has always been known for them, especially these past few years, is that they're going to be fundamental. They're going to play disciplined football each and every play, and it's going to be tough to beat. That's a reason why they're number one in the FCS right here, right now in the FCS playoff. They're going to take on Illinois State, who actually beat Central Arkansas yep. this past Saturday. So, but one thing I do want to say is that the Governors are the 10th team in the OVC to have two or more wins in the FCS playoff. Last time that happened was Jacksonville State in 2015. But the Governors have been setting records for throughout this whole season. And it's something that has been really amazing to see that on how it's, I know it's me and Gabe's senior year, Patton is his junior year. But to see how these guys been developing throughout this season and knocking off stuff that has been truly unheard of and not even foreseen, because Mark Hudspeth, the head coach for the Governors, it's his first year. Nobody saw that coming through. He wins OVC Coach of the Year. Javon Craig putting up outstanding numbers. D'Angelo Wilson, one of the best receivers yep. in the OVC, seems like in the FCS, Benico Harley still. They have phenomenal playmakers. Josephus Smith, first team all defense for the OVC. He's still, it's just so many playmakers for this team that you have to, looking down the line 10, 15 years, you're going to come back. Me and Gabe Patton will, we're going to come back to this where be like, yo, this team was really dominant.
And a lot of praise was offered to Will Healy on what he's been doing the past two seasons, both kind of locally in the Middle Tennessee area, News Channel 5. You had News 2 kind of interview him. I think Coach Hudspeth has got to be getting some national attention here, because he took this team. It's what the Titan, I know we're going to talk about them a little bit later. They were good the last year, but you want to be great, and this team is great. To me, they're a great football team who plays the right way on both sides of the ball and special teams. And so, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, how long are we going to have this guy? This is a guy who...
Hey, whoa. See, we're thinking about the present right now. We're looking at
I'm just... We got to throw it out there, because it's a topic that unfortunately is going to have to be discussed.
Indeed. Sometimes it does show... Like, we have pretty much the same roster as we have with Healy, and he's just taking it to new heights.
He's taking a guy like Javon Craig, who he was under Will Healy, and he didn't have anywhere near the stats, and a lot of that has to do with Javon and his play, but a lot of that has to do with the play calling and a system that Coach Hudd has put him in, and he's been elevating
thriving.
Himself.
I think it also with Coach Hudd, under Coach Hudd, the offense is more high-powered.
Yep.
Even more now, because sometimes under Coach Healy, they got a little conservative on certain plays, but now they like Javon can throw the ball down the field. He's not afraid to chunk it 50 yards. And where that's something where last year and 2 years ago, people weren't seeing that at all. They was thinking they're not going to throw it even 20 yards at all. So you got to just see like, yo, these people are legit. And Austin Peay, it's truly remarkable. Sometimes you got to be lost for words, like how I am right now, because this team is just going out and getting it done each and every week. Now they have a higher chance of making it to the FCS championship. Who would have thought that Austin Peay could have been in the FCS championship alone?
Austin Peay would have been well, yeah, in the FCS championship.
That was the big thing. I went to one of the earlier practices in the season, and kind of small or large, how it would have been, they broke down OVC champs, FCS playoff. That was their goal from the very beginning, and I'm not sure a whole lot of people believed it. I don't know if I believed it necessarily, but here they are. They're right where they want to be, and I know we don't want to jump ahead too much, but North Dakota State, that's going to be a tough out for
Indeed.
Austin Peay.
That's going to be one of the toughest teams, and that's going to be a true. But you can't really just go ahead of head, because Montana State isn't no slouch over themselves.
Yep.
That's why I had to ask Isaiah, because their receivers are pretty dynamic. I know one of their receivers went for over 100 yards last week. They went up 47-7
right.
against Albany.
Well, looking at
10:43 left in the game.
Yeah, so and looking at all the scores for the FCS playoff, none of them were close. I don't know what kind of development that is, but all of them were high scoring and they weren't close. So that's just something to look forward to. I expect this one to be a little colder or a little bit kind of lower scoring, mainly just because of the weather. Because Although I love Javon, it's hard to throw a football in 3 inches of snow and in 16-degree weather. So that's just something to look forward to. But that also, that's how Austin Peay does. They don't mind to play a little smash-mouth football with Kentel and others.
It doesn't matter where it's rain, sleet, or snow, to the point where, hey, you can just go out and get it done. But we're going to switch it over and talk more about college football, because the college football playoff was announced this past Sunday, at 11, and we had four teams in it.
Yep.
LSU at number one, Ohio State at number two, Clemson at number three, and then, yeah, this is why I wore it. Oklahoma is sitting at number four. I know Patton's upset, but I was happy because we beat Baylor twice this season. At first, that first game was looking a little rough. I had a lot of people, some not saying no names, Gabe.
Little chirp action going on. Was talking
reckless to me that first game, but Jalen Hurts and company got it done, just plain and simple. We had CeeDee Lamb this time too, but Oklahoma got it done. One thing I do want to point out is, just going to be honest, that I have a good friend of mine. He works at the Philly Inquirer. His name is DeMichael Cole. He's an LSU fan, so I know there's going to be a lot of trash talk coming between this matchup. And that's something he's been waiting for, because I know he said Jalen Hurts was he did a little number to LSU these past few years.
Indeed.
So it's going to be
– yeah, I would be a little scared if I were you, Marcus, because this LSU team, how they looked against Georgia, my goodness. Joe Burrow, I mean, we already knew Heisman, that was locked up in week six at least. Once Tua went down, I mean, there was really no question, but – Joe Burrow, I mean, my goodness, he has really turned into the prospect coming out of the into the NFL next season. But the big thing I'd like to talk about is that LSU defense cranked it up against Jake Fromm. And I know Oklahoma has a really good offense, but if they can make him one-dimensional, I love the Jalen Hurts story. I loved it whenever he came in for Tua in the SEC championship game. Kind of gave guys like Javon Craig a reason, stick around. What happens, the good things happen to good people, and that's exactly what happened to Jalen Hurts. He stuck around. He didn't do Justin Fields for Ohio State and just left campus because he wasn't getting his way. He stuck around and it worked, but that's going to be a tough matchup. I'm sure you know that. It's not going to be a cakewalk.
It's not going to be a cakewalk at all. Joe Burrow has been phenomenal, and I'm already getting somewhat anxiety as December 28th is coming towards me, because Joe Burrow has been unstoppable. That offense in general has been unstoppable. They've just been rolling through every team, is what it seemed like. One thing about Jalen Hurts for me, he's been turning the ball over a little bit too much for me, to the point where you can't turn it over against LSU. They're going to control the clock. They will. Joe Burrow will march down the field on you with ease, and you can't turn the ball over, and they're going to put up a lot of points. I think it's either going to be a blowout or a high-scoring game.
Yeah, I don't see a way where the Oklahoma defense stops Joe Burrow, but I could see a way that Jalen Hurts goes tick for tack with Joe Burrow. I've seen it happen already this season a couple times. But he's going to have to throw the ball. I don't think that he's going to be able to outrun some of these linebackers for LSU. But to me, he's shown a real ability to throw the ball. And that was probably the biggest question. He's given himself a chance to not only be in the NFL next season, but play quarterback. Because what Lamar Jackson is doing right now shows that if you surround your quarterback with weapons, use their strengths, I think Jalen Hurts has shown he can do that. But it's going to be a fun one, a nerve-wracking one for you, but I'm just going to be watching at home with my feet kicked up.
DeMichael, if you're tuned in, please, I'm not going to trash talk you. I won't, because we know how we both get in a LSU game, how you get with an LSU game or how I get with an Oklahoma game. Gabe has witnessed it a little bit, so I'm not going to trash talk you. We're just going to come like good friends are, and after the game,
Marcus is going to be the bigger man, and that's why we have him on the show here. The bigger man is here. He's not going to chirp until afterwards, and if they win, I might have to mute my phone, my Twitter, everything, because he's going to let us know.
If we win, that's going to be a major upset for sure, because LSU has been dominant all season long. I'm trying to just catch myself And, for sure.
And the big thing that's always talked about is, should they expand the playoff?
No,
to me,
I don't think
absolutely
so.
Not, because there is a clear difference between 1 and 4. If you put, say we do 10 teams, number exactly. 10 Florida, I mean, they're going to get absolutely annihilated by this LSU team.
Because one thing I will say, like, these conference championships are the – that's one thing I see it as. These conference championships are the expansion of the
playoff.
Of the playoff, because you have to get it done in there. If not, like Utah. If Utah were to pick up and win – It's an if on whether Oklahoma gets in or Utah gets in, because Utah was playing really good football throughout the season until Oregon just comes and smacks them right in the mouth. But we're going to switch it over to the 2 and 3 matchup, because that's one thing, me personally, I was scared, because I didn't want to face Clemson, because Clemson has been this past half, that first half of the season with Trevor Lawrence, he had about 16 touchdowns. Well, I believe it's 14 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. After then, he ain't threw another pick since in those first 6 weeks. Clemson has just been dominant. That's one team. They're on a 28-game win streak.
My Lord.
And they're the third seed, which
Help!
Is Trevor Lawrence has just been out of this world. ETN, Offensive Player of the Year. The run game has been phenomenal. Patton, I got to say, that's one team that I wouldn't want to face right now.
No, and this kind of reminds me of Gabe's team, the Patriots, last year. This team, who's won 28 games in a row, they're playing the underdog role.
I mean, exactly.
What world are we living in where a team like Clemson is playing the underdog role? But there is a point to be made. They have won 28 games, and as you mentioned, they're the third team in the country. The thing is they've got the best quarterback in the nation. They've probably got the best group of receivers in the nation. Oh, you got a couple Knoxville kids, T. Higgins. And
T. Higgins has been – that speed on T. Higgins.
And I love to rile up Tennessee fans, but there's pictures of Trevor Lawrence and T. Higgins in UT jerseys, and my boy Butch Jones, he ran him out of town. So they're not in there.
But you got to recognize also that Trevor Lawrence is from Georgia.
Right, but he's a Peyton Manning disciple. He loved Peyton Manning growing up, and somehow he got out of their grasp. But anyway.
Also, but I gotta point out too, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, they also from Georgia, and then
both UT, they wanted to go.
They wanted to go to UT.
Instead, they've got Geronimo.
Oh, gosh. We're not going to talk about Tennessee, because I know Aaron's going to feel some type
right,
of
right.
He knows how I feel about Tennessee and UT Knox, because we're going to talk about good football. We're not going to talk about
right.
that, because Ohio State, but Ohio State has been, Justin Fields has been pretty well. They struggled a little bit against Wisconsin early, but it was Wisconsin.
Right, man. And that's been the big worry for me this season, is that every time Ohio State has played a decent team besides Michigan, they just own Michigan. They've owned them mentally. They own Harbaugh. But other than that, they've struggled. They've come out to slow starts, and they've had to roar back at the very end, and that's exactly what they did against Wisconsin. But a thing that can be said is they've won those games. They've found a way to win them.
You can't come out sluggish against Clemson, because once Clemson is firing on all cylinders, they're going to be tough to beat, just plain and simple. And they have the defense that
absolutely
the Clemson's defense, their front four isn't the same how it was last year, where they seemed like all four of their front four could get after the quarterback each and every play whenever they wanted to. But the back seven has been so deep and dominant, they don't have to get pressure every time, because their linebackers and secondary is locked down.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting to see between both matchups, as I believe Clemson is the 29th.
Yeah, I believe so.
As Oklahoma versus LSU plays on the 28th. What do you have to say?
One final thing is, this is a way that Chase Young can really solidify himself into the number one pick. Say he gets 4 sacks against the number one pick in next year's draft. I don't care who the Bengals want. They've got to take Chase Young. If he can take over a game, this is a real shot for him to solidify the number one. Same with Joe Burrow. Say he runs through competition these next few games. So that's always fun to watch, is the best players in America, the best players going into the draft, they're playing important football.
Also, one thing to point out is that the finalists for the Heisman are coming out tonight, later on tonight. So you got to believe that Jalen Hurts actually – the 4 players that's going to be on the Heisman finalist are in the college playoff.
Yeah. Indeed.
Chase
the way
Young,
I like it.
Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, and my mind.
Joe Burrow, of course.
Who is the Heisman front runner?
Yeah,
why am I going blank on the Heisman front runner? Who's most likely going to get it?
Right.
But we're going to switch it over now because after we're talking about a lot of college football, we're going to go to the professional side of it and talk about the NFL because it was a lot of good games, a lot of not so good games.
Indeed.
But you know what? Let me go ahead and get up my rant off real quick, guys, because I was at Mercedes-Benz Superdome this past Sunday, and I watched that Carolina versus Atlanta game. And guys, I just want to tell y'all, if you thought about Kyle Allen being a franchise quarterback, please stop.
Whoever thought about that?
I
don't
know. He's not it, guys. Just plain and simple. They don't. Please, Panthers. Please, you already fired Ron Rivera. You thought that was going to lead a spark, but Kyle Allen is just not it. He can't deliver. He's barely throwing 300 yards. He hasn't eclipsed 350 yet at all. And that Kyle Allen on these throws against Atlanta, who doesn't have the best defense. They didn't have the best defense at all. He was struggling. CMC can't really do much. And if you trade Cam Newton, just plain and simple, Christian McCaffrey not going to be there for a long time if Kyle Allen is going to be your starting quarterback for 8 to 10 years. You might see Christian McCaffrey in about 6 years.
And nor should he, because this could end up very like how Calvin Johnson was with the Detroit Lions. You don't want a guy like that not playing in the postseason year after year. And I'd be careful, but that's a tough situation because Cam Newton hasn't really shown that he can either stay healthy or when he's healthy, stay healthy, because he can't stay healthy and he can't remain healthy. So it's just kind of a weird situation they're in right now.
One thing that got me, though, is that you didn't give Cam Newton time to be fully healthy at all. He just came off a shoulder injury, shoulder surgery, which is worse than that. He had surgery in his shoulder and he had foot problems, and you still gonna bring him out week one.
I think a lot of that has to do with what Cam Newton wanted, and unfortunately they listened to him. And in this day of age, you have to really stop, because this could possibly end Cam Newton's career. Him coming back out there, that offensive line isn't the greatest, and he took some hits that he shouldn't have.
Well, that's the competitive fire in a guy. Yeah. I mean, can you really tell someone who really wants to be on the field that they can't be on the field? He'll probably say, I heard a story today about Kobe Bryant having a dislocated finger in the game. The doctor had to forcefully pop his finger back in there, and he just walked back in. Some guys are just built different. Now, if that was me, I'd just be crying. I wouldn't know what to do. But some guys are just built differently, and yeah,
broken a bone in my body, so I know I would be in a lot of pain if even with a broken pinky.
Man, whatever. I don't want it.
It's broken. I know I'm going to be in a lot of pain. But with Kyle Allen, he finished the day with 293 yards, one touchdown.
And he's not a bad player. He can be a great backup in this league, but I agree, he's not a franchise
quarterback. And he had two interceptions. The first interception, I will say, wasn't his fault. He threw it to Thomas on the go route because I was watching the game. I was there at it. And Thomas, he went like this, and it hit him in the hands, and he tried to juggle it, tapped it up, and it actually went to the Atlanta safety. So it wasn't Thomas. It was really Thomas' fault for that interception. It wasn't Kyle Allen's fault. But the second one, it was no excuse. I felt like I was on Madden then on the second interception, because Kyle Allen drops back the throw, decides to roll out to his right. Curtis Samuel, number 12 for the Panthers, goes on a seam route, go route. He was open. I'm literally pointing. He's open. Kyle Allen takes too long really with his reads. That's one thing I've noticed with my eye test, that he takes a little bit long. So about time when he actually saw that Samuel was wide open down the field, Samuel had stopped running. He was literally standing still about 40 yards deep. So when Kyle actually threw it, defensive back was waiting on it. It was too late then, because they went cover one, and the safety wasn't the cover three, but almost like cover two, but he was playing like cover six almost. So he was backing up, and he was zoning on the outside. So he was just waiting on it, noticed it, and picked it off. And it was just like, yeah, the game got out of hand quick. They lost 40-20. It was just not good at all. But we're going to go into some good football, because really almost the best game of the year, it seemed like, the Saints versus 49ers. Off of Jimmy G, Drew Brees, touchdowns to the left and right. I was upset that I couldn't watch the first half of the game. I was glad I left the Atlanta game so early so I could watch the fourth quarter because, man, I definitely tuned in.
I didn't see the first half, but I caught the fourth. I caught the fourth quarter, and they immediately scored, went down, score. I said, whoever has the ball last possession is going to win the game, and that's pretty much what happened. Unfortunately for Saints fans, I say this about the Falcons. If there's a way to lose, the Falcons will lose. And unfortunately about the Saints, if they're on defense and there's a way to lose, they probably will lose.
Marcus Williams, why are you trying to go high on George Kittle?
I mean, this is the same guy that did the Minnesota Miracle, Marcus Williams, if I'm not mistaken. He tried to make a hero play, and here he is losing his team the ball game. But the thing is, if you didn't watch the first half, it's exactly like the second half of the fourth quarter. If you looked at the scoreboard, you're like, man, these two teams were going back and forth. That's exactly what happened, and it's very rare you get these games that kind of live up to the hype. Last year's game against Kansas City in New England, it lived up to the hype. This one, the exact same way. And my goodness, we've got some very few years do we have this many good teams in the NFL. We've got six or seven teams that you could see win the Super Bowl.
That's why if somebody asked me, I don't have no clue. I don't know who's going to be. I can't tell you who's going to actually be in the Super Bowl.
Much less the playoffs.
Indeed.
Because, well, there's one team, one division where I can say it's not up to par to, and that's the NFC East. Can we all agree on saying that's the worst division in football?
I wouldn't say worst, but it's definitely right there. It's real close.
What's the argument?
Isn't Broncos?
The whole thing is right now is that the Redskins, who are either I think they've won four or five games, they're not out of it yet. And that's a sham that a team like the Redskins aren't out of it just yet, just because you've got the Cowboys and the Eagles giving the division back and forth. They don't want it. I don't want
it. They're 5-7 right now. Both teams are 5-7. Every other team has 8 wins right now.
Yeah, you are correct. Yeah, they are the worst. And you know what's unfortunate is that they're the big market teams. You got Dallas, the America's team. You got the Philadelphia market. You have the New York Giant market. And then you got the Redskins. Well, the Washington market. These are four big market teams. All of them are not good. Not good. It's not good for the league, right. I don't think.
I think Eli Manning is actually going to be playing today.
Yeah. Oh, Lord,
Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones hurt his ankle. So, it's going to be an NFC East division game on Monday Night Football. I don't know if you want to check that one actually out because the Eagles are playing the Giants.
Yeah, it'd be a garbage bowl. Two bad teams versus two bad teams.
And the big thing for tonight, Eli is 500. His whole record is 500. So
for his career?
Yes. So if he wins tonight, he's an above-average quarterback. If he loses tonight, below average. But I'd take a below-average quarterback with two Super Bowl rings coming from a Titans fan. But that's a funny element to look forward to tonight.
Indeed.
Lamar Jackson is the runaway MVP. I'm sorry. It's now, after that loss – the Seattle Seahawks had against the Rams in a dominant fashion by the Rams, shutting down the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson really couldn't do a lot at all, really, throughout that whole game. It hurt me because I really wanted Russell Wilson to get this MVP. And this was the chance because how this division is with the 49ers and the Seahawks, if the Seahawks would have won yesterday, that was going to be the number one seed. But since they lost, they dropped all the way to the wild card at number 5 seed. And that's how close 1, 2, 3. Now, actually, the Packers are the number 2 seed. Yep. And the Saints are number 3.
Well, I wouldn't say Lamar is the runaway. Russell Wilson, he will have to face the Cardinals and
the
49ers. And if he has an explosive game against the Cardinals, blow them out. If he has a great game against the 49ers, win that game, Lamar has to play two division rivals in the Browns and the Steelers. Now, They're not going to lay down.
The Steelers game is going to be that's going to be the one to solidify it because the Steelers are trying to fight for that wild card.
Indeed.
Because I know one thing, that's a great segue, because the Titans are 7-1 right now after Tannehill came back. They're trying to fight.
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill is actually 7-1, which is something I wasn't prepared for, just being honest, because the Titans are actually right here in the making to actually win the division. They just got to win these last two out of three going against the Texans, who lost a bad loss to the Broncos. Drew Lock was just shredding the Texans defense. Deshaun Watson couldn't do anything. Patton, I know you was happy about it.
I was a little happy. A little happy. This past seven, 8 weeks has been one heck of a roller coaster, because after Mariota was yanked, I'm the biggest Mariota fan there is. I'm still going to buy his New England Patriots jersey when he goes to New England next year as Tom Brady. We'll talk about that later. But this, it's just been a really fun roller coaster to watch that. After this team, it looked down and out. You had 2-4. You're thinking there's no way they can go on to win at least 10 or 9 of their last 10 games. So, and here they are. They are 7-1. They've got a real shot. But the big thing is, I've been in this position before. Last season, we had a chance to win the division. If only we could beat Andrew Luck and the Colts at home on Sunday Night Football, the whole world watching. And Mariota couldn't play, and we had to see Blaine Gabbert. But the thing is, it's a little different right now because
– you couldn't beat Andrew Luck at all throughout his whole career.
Nope.
He went 11 games.
Yep.
He went 11 games against
and,
the Titans.
I was – as bad as this sounds, I wasn't upset that he retired. I'm not upset that he's out of my life. I never want to hear him again unless he wants to come down to West End in the Titans. But anyway, it's been a fun ride. But the thing is, it just feels different this season. There's a real swagger, and there's a real – the national media is starting to talk about the Titans. Even last year, they weren't talking about us because we weren't scoring a lot of points. It was the defenses getting us through it. But on Sunday, it was the offense that won us the game because they went possession for possession against Derek Carr and John Gruden, and they ended up blowing the doors off him in the fourth quarter.
I'm surprised. I am really surprised that Pat did not say anything to me about this game at all until right now, because the Titans did beat the Raiders. We didn't have Josh Jacobs.
Beat the stank off of.
And that's partially why.
We didn't have Josh Jacobs. It hurt us a lot.
And it was a
game scratch at that, too.
Absolutely.
So it was this out of nowhere, Josh Jacobs was not going to play. I was like, oh, man.
Well, I will say this. You know what that is?
No.
What is that?
Henry season.
Oh, yep.
Henry season. It's December, baby. That boy's legs get chugging. You try to tackle him, stiff on.
And
stiff
see, on. This is another reason. Last year, Aaron King and Emmett was like, get Derrick Henry out of here. And I'm just like,
in December.
This man has been beasting. And this year is another testament to where Derrick Henry is putting up a historic season for himself and on a contract year at that. And he's getting it done. And like, why would you want to get rid of Derrick Henry? So you want Deion Lewis to lead you the way?
And my whole thing is, if we're going to get rid of Derrick Henry, then why did we go through the struggles of his first three seasons to where, to be fair to them, he was inconsistent early in the season. But right now, he's the hottest running back in the league. He is second in rushing, only behind Nick Chubb over in Cleveland. But to me, I said the same thing about the JSU receiver, that's garbage time yards. No one cares about the Browns anymore. They are dead and gone. But right now, the hottest back in the league. And the Titans, the whole reason we haven't been splashing the cash in free agency was for times like today. We haven't paid many peoples for paying guys like Ryan Tannehill. He's going to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks, unfortunately or fortunately for us, after this season.
Oh,
Same goes for Derrick Henry.
Don't give Ryan Tannehill max. You're telling me they're going to give Ryan
Sometimes
Tannehill max?
Not a max deal, but I think if we can't get a contract in order, I think they're going to franchise him, and that's $28 million to the cap. And that's one of the – per year, that's one of the highest. And one thing I don't want is a Kirk Cousins situation where we're just going year by year.
Don't talk bad about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is getting it done.
He wasn't getting it done in Washington.
Yeah,
that was the whole thing, because there was a cloud over that team. Is he staying? Is he going? Is he happy? Is he not? I'd like to see us lock him down for 2 to 3 years. One thing I don't think Ryan Tannehill can win us a Super Bowl. That's just me, but
I agree. Ryan Tannehill will not win the Titans a Super Bowl.
But I think one thing, I think this team can personally, because it takes running the ball to win the Super Bowl. And Gabe, a New England Patriots fan, they'll say that first. The run game has always been number one for Bill Belichick, and right now that's what they're doing.
Now, you talked about the Patriots. That's a great another segue because Gabe's team, they've been struggling right
at
now.
At 10-3.
At
it's 10-3.
Been
a real struggle.
It's been a real struggle because Tom Brady hasn't been the Tom Brady of his past few years. And I know Gabe, he's been having to get something off his chest. Go right ahead.
Anybody that has watched the Patriots game that is not biased, which I guess I am technically biased because I'm a Patriots fan, but anybody else has been watching the games, we'll see this. One, Sonny Michel has not been given as much production. Last night, we lost to the 49ers. Also, were robbed of a touchdown.
Chiefs.
I mean, yeah, you're right. The Chiefs. I'm sorry. The Chiefs. Robbed of a touchdown. But I don't think Sonny Michel played more than 20 snaps. We had in James White because Sonny can't run and he can't catch. We played James White. James White is actually a playmaker. We have Julian Edelman, who is 5'9", is our best receiver. Other than that, we have rookie receivers. And Tom Brady is also holding the ball for 3.5 seconds. That's the longest we've ever seen Tom Brady hold the ball. He hits guys in their hands. Sometimes he throws the ball just out of pocket near a receiver so it won't be intercepted. Our line, we're not getting as much blocking. And our defense is playing immaculate. They're keeping us in the games. So what much can – Tom Brady isn't the same Brady of yesteryear, the elite guy that can just do whatever you need. But also, even that Tom Brady will still need some help. He can't catch the ball. Obviously, we saw that in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. He can't catch the ball, too. But if he hits you in the hands, you got to catch the ball.
And my big thing with this whole Max Kellerman falling off a cliff theory, I would agree if Tom Brady looks just as fast in the pocket right now. He's still evading guys in the pocket. And you saw his game yesterday, he ran for a 20-yard gain. That's something we didn't see in the early years of
him. That is a 42-year-old man.
But one thing I would love, and it's just not going to happen because there's some vendetta against Antonio Brown. Why is he still not playing? My question is, why is he not playing? Because we've got a player in Tyreek Hill who literally broke his child's arm, and he's still on the field right now. He's not – no suspensions at all.
I got a question. Because, Patton, I know you were somewhat confused about this as well. Gabe, I'm going to ask you because you're a Patriots fan. Why did they cut Josh Gordon?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm a fan, not an insider. I'm not sure why we cut him.
He's playing right now for Seattle.
They cut him immediately after they got Sanu. And Sanu's not offering much right now. So I don't know if that had something to do with it, because as soon as they got Sanu, they cut Josh Gordon.
Coming into the season, we had rookie receiver N'Keal Harry. We drafted him first round. We had Demaryius Thomas, Josh Gordon, Julian Edelman, and Antonio Brown. We knew we would be getting Antonio Brown. N'Keal Harry went down with injury. We cut Demaryius Thomas because was that five receivers? Everybody can play. Josh Gordon, he has had his troubles.
I think they cut him Demaryius before Thomas the season. Antonio Brown.
Yeah, we cut him before the season. We had too many players. Josh Gordon has had his struggles. And I guess it was just time to cut ties with that because we've had him around for 2 years.
Yeah.
We got Sanu, which he hasn't been doing much for. So, like
I said, the most contribution he's done is field punts.
Indeed.
I think that's because he's the number one receiver also at that.
And once again, also, rookie receivers, Muhammad Sanu, he's a new guy. He doesn't know our playbook yet.
Right.
So, that's why we're fine. We're just going.
And defenses are keying in on Sanu as well because they know that he's the best receiver. So they're going to have the number one DB on them. They're going to have a safety over the top sometimes.
Well, they're doubling Edelman. They're doubling James White. We are fine. All we got to do is take it week by week. We're getting smarter. We're getting healthier. We'll be fine.
And I agree. And this whole – it's never been about the regular season
ever,
for Bill Belichick.
Ever.
Except for that 16-0 season. Other than that, they've always wanted to peak in the playoff. They're not peaking right now. And that's got to be a worry because it's not like they're blown out against Kansas City. They're right there to win the ballgame.
You gotta watch out for the Bills, though. The Bills have been playing really well.
They have. My only question on defense is our linebackers' ability to play man coverage for extended periods of time. Other than that, our D-line is getting to the quarterback. We have 20 interceptions on the season. What's the record? What is the record? I need to know the record because I think we could possibly go get it. But, we're playing fine. we're playing fine.
And the whole thing is they're wanting to kind of just ease along. They don't need these regular season victories because although they'd love to have the home playoff games, they don't mind going out on the road. They did it against Kansas City, the best atmosphere in the NFL. They're not that bothered on going on the road. But one thing they do need to get is they need to get Tom Brady some sort of rhythm with these receivers, because you see it every time he goes off the field is he's just frustrated with these guys. He's not getting a lot of separation, and when they are, they're dropping passes, and that's just frustrating for a quarterback to have.
Absolutely. My last thing on it, if we can get some talent at the receiver, I think we'll be fine. If we can get some production from Sony, we'll be great. I just don't want to see Tom Brady go out with, you know, rookie receivers not doing the right things, and he seems like an angry guy.
Absolutely.
Know? Yeah. You got Lamar Jackson. You got the Bills trying to sneak up behind him.
Take
the divisions, something that we haven't seen since what we was elementary school having.
Yeah. Right. Right.
That the Patriots, they didn't win the division. But we're going to switch over to the NBA before we head on out, because one thing I do want to point out is that all three of our teams
suck.
They're not doing the best right now. The Cavs 5-17, Portland sitting at 9-15.
Hey, bro, we got Melo.
Actually, the Thunder
that
is the best.
That
is true. The Thunder actually is the best out of the three at 10-12. Who would have thought that?
Yeah. Well, Chris Paul is a snitch, and we don't like these little narcs out on the field. Chris Paul, a couple clips. He did it yesterday against I can't even remember who he did it against.
It was Jordan Bell, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the Timberwolves game.
We do not advocate for snitching here on Just Talking Sports. We're all about kind of helping our friends out, not hurting.
It helped for a W. So as a Thunder fan, I was happy about it. Because that delay of game and the missed free throws by Cat Karl Anthony Towns led to a victory in overtime.
Yep.
So I'll take that win and the win column for my team. Indeed. And Chris Paul.
So how do y'all feel? Who do y'all think is the MVP leader right now?
What AD did last night, dropping 50, and he's starting to become that leader of the Lakers. Although LeBron had a great night, he's having another efficient season. The big thing for me this season is he's taken off on the offensive end, and he's starting to ramp up the defense again. And that's been the biggest thing as a Cavaliers fan. I've seen that defense slowly decline when he was here in Cleveland, but he's ramped it back up. And the big thing is because he's got a guy like Anthony Davis who can do it on both ends. And if someone gets by him, that's one of the more elite shot blockers in the NBA for Anthony Davis. So to me, Anthony Davis, but I don't know. I'd like to get your guys' opinion.
What you think?
In my opinion, as far as MVP frontrunners, I go Giannis, just because he's the only superstar, or he's the only lone superstar right now. You know, you got your Embiid's and Simmons and on the Sixers. You have your LeBron's and AD's. Yep. So we'll see what – I don't know.
But I think Kawhi is officially eliminated just because –
he can't play games.
Can't play games, and then once he's playing him, he's not looking as elite as he was in Toronto, which was – I mean, it's always going to be a worry when you've got the amount of star power they've got. It's just going to take time.
Yeah, it's going to take time for them to mesh together, because when they're on fire on all cylinders, they're hard to
scary.
Stop, and they're really scary. My pick was Giannis as well. Giannis only has two games where he doesn't have a double-double.
My Lord.
Through 23 to 25 games right now?
Eastern teams.
Help!
He's a beast, yeah. 20-3 right now.
They're 20-3 right now. The Lakers are 21-3.
Yeah, 21-3, yeah.
But Giannis right now has been dominant no matter what. He's averaging 30-11 right now for the season. Those numbers is looking like Shaq. That's the one thing that I've told people is that he's shooting the three ball now, and it's efficiently. And if he can do that, who's going to stop him? Who's going to stop him?
Not a soul. Giannis, I believe that Giannis has the potential to be the greatest player of all time. If he can continuously put up these numbers for at least like a 10-year stretch and get a couple of rings, he has an argument. He's 6'11". and he cannot be stopped.
He's 7 foot. He's all seven.
He will take seven. He can, regardless, he cannot be stopped.
And as big as LeBron is, Giannis is as tall. He weighs more than he does. And to me, he's a better defender. So that's just kind of the crazy thing about Giannis.
He was right behind Rudy Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year and won MVP.
And he's by himself. He's doing all this by himself. It's not like with LeBron, he can take possessions off. And for Giannis, they cannot really take games off as though it's a good collective unit. Other than him, he's the only star they've got.
They lost Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah. That too. So he has to put more of a load on himself. Chris Middleton was out for a little portion. He just got back last week.
Yep.
So Giannis had to put in more work. And he's still been dominating, which has been just crazy. Now, we went from really good teams. We're going to stay with the good teams because I got to ask you guys, how do you feel about Philly? Because Philly has been it's been questionable at times. They're sitting at that fourth seed right now. I believe they lost 7 games. Is that correct?
Yes, they're 17-7 right now in the fourth seed. I think they're fine because of the fact that they do have two superstars on their team, and they are also playing in the more forgiving Eastern Conference.
Absolutely.
But they have to get some perimeter scoring from some wing somewhere.
Because I believe it was the last game, I saw Joel Embiid only took about 10 shots compared to Tobias Harris taking 22. And I was blown out of my mind because – it seemed like statistically now, Joel Embiid has not shot in the ball as much as he did last season. And it's starting to show questions because Ben Simmons is being a facilitator as he's been basically all his whole life. But like, if Joel Embiid is not going to be the one taking all the shots, how is this team really going to succeed?
To me, I think what they're doing right now is trying to get Tobias Harris a real in the offense because I think they know what Joel Embiid is going to give them. If they need him, at least from the games I've been watching, they've been going to him late to kind of get the points and get the wins. But to me, they're just trying to get Tobias Harris into this one, get him really taken over and show the Tobias Harris that we were seeing in Detroit because that was one of the better ball players in the NBA both ways. So right now I think they're just kind of – they know they can afford to lose some games because Boston isn't playing to their strengths right now either. So I think they know they've got some time. They know they can kind of take some games off and try other things. So to me, I think they're just kind of slowly going through the season as they should because regular season means very little these days.
I don't know. You gotta have at least a home court advantage in the playoff time, and
I think they'll be fine. Any team right now in the NBA with two legitimate all-star and up level players, they'll definitely be fine. They'll probably be able to win a playoff series at least one.
The way Ben has been playing from the perimeter. He's starting to shoot threes now and he's starting to make threes now, and that's the same thing with Giannis. If he's making that, you're gonna have to go up on him, and then once you go up on him, he can get past the best of them.
Indeed. I do want to mention my boy Luka because we didn't mention him in MVP category. Right now, the Mavs sit at the third seed, 16-7. If they can keep up this production, Luka might win MVP, especially I don't think they'll be a better team for it if Porzingis doesn't come along. But if Porzingis doesn't come along, they keep up this production and Luka keeps these numbers, he might be our MVP.
I think he will be more for most improved right now. I think he has most improved down pack.
What about Pascal Siakam? Going from 16 to 23?
Yes, but
25, actually.
Well, Siakam, I think, he's taking 20 shots a game.
That is true.
Luka hasn't been taking as many shots. He's more facilitating, more rebounds, more assists right now for him. He's been getting more triple-doubles at that. He's racking up triple-doubles with ease now. I know there was a notification saying that Luka – he has the most 25 and 5
games. He has, I believe, 17 or 19 straight. I saw the stat last night. I actually got kind of mad about it. My friend is a Mavs fan. He sent that. I got mad about it. I went back to Russell Westbrook's 3 triple-double years. Never had, I think he had 12 in a row of 25 and 5. No more than 25 and 5, yeah.
I think it all depends on what Luka averages. I think if he averages stupid amount of points like James Harden did a few years ago, because they weren't the best team in the league, but you just kind of had to give it to him only because of his stats. But
I mean, he was averaging 36. He's been averaging 35
right.
Indeed.
The past 3 years.
I think it's going to be hard to keep up this pace because he's going to start to see more doubles, and that's just going to be natural. So we'll see how he handles that. But the thing is, he can pass the ball with the best of them. So he's been able to kind of pass out of doubles as well.
Now I got to ask you, Patton, because it was a lot of turmoil in this Cavs locker room.
Yep.
And they're not sold on the head coach. So I'm going to have to ask you, because you was somewhat heated and you've been waiting on this moment here. So I'm going to let you take it away.
So for everyone who doesn't know, myself, Gabe, and Marcus, we've got a group chat that we kind of pass ideas through, when we can do the show, when can't we. And also, we've also thrown some news in there to kind of talk around. This is something that I've intentionally not talked about because this just drives me crazy. A report came out this week that the players of the Cleveland Cavaliers do not exactly know where this team is going, and they don't like how this team is being run like a college program. My question, or my, I guess, response to those teams, those players, suck it up. This team sucks. This team will continue to suck. You've got, to me, I think the snake of the team right now, the person who's been leaking this information, is either two people. Number one, Jordan Clarkson, a guy who thinks he is one of the better six men in the league. To me, I watch every single Cavaliers game. I see him take stupid three after stupid three. I see him get burned on the defensive end. And the big thing is as soon as he comes in, not like we're blowing teams out, but we've got a 4 or 5 point lead, and then a blink of an eye, we're down 12. And that's, I think, all to do with Jordan Clarkson, because he doesn't play how Coach Beilein wants him to play. The whole thing with Coach Beilein is he wants ball movement. He wants movement off the ball. He wants guys getting shots from everywhere around the court, not just one guy coming off a screen and shooting a bogus three-pointer. So to my number one guess is Jordan Clarkson. My under-the-radar pick is Kevin Love. I think he is getting a little fed up with it, and I can't blame him because he was here when the greatest era of Cavs basketball was being played with LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. And understandably, he doesn't really want to be here. But for Jordan Clarkson, this is right where you are in the NBA. You're with the bottom tier. You're not going to be anywhere near unless you want to just ride the bench like Jared Dudley. So my big thing here is just kind of keep it along. This was always going to be a tough season. We've got two really rookie point guards in Darius Garland and also Colin Sexton. It's always going to be a tough one. This is for the future. Don't make some boneheaded play, fire John Beilein, and then we go back to Larry Drew. Just trust the process. the Philadelphia 76ers have shown it's possible.
That trust the process took, what, 5 years?
It doesn't matter.
And I'd be willing to wait 5 years than just be like a Washington Wizards who's been in disarray for 12 years straight. I'd rather be horrible for 5 years than to be average at the very best for 12.
Now I got to ask y'all before we get on out of here, do y'all see any standings-wise, any change before until the start of the 2020 season?
I don't think the Mavericks can keep up this pace, but the one thing I would like to say is the Miami Heat are looking like a real dark horse. That was one of my predictions, as Tyler Hero last night having one of his better games of his
14
career.
14 points in overtime.
Yep, had 12 in the fourth quarter, and this is a kid, he said it in college, I'm a bucket, and that's exactly what he is. He's a bucket. He loves scoring the basketball, and that's exactly what Jimmy Butler likes. He likes these hard-nosed players that are going to practice their you-know-what off and really give it their all, and that's exactly what he's done. I really like the Miami Heat right now.
I love the Heat. Go ahead.
I would expect to see a lot of movement in the West and the East as far as the bottom teams that will come in and out of the playoffs. I think the top maybe five teams are probably solidified in both conferences as far as making a playoff in a playoff spot.
I'm hoping that Portland try to come and pull themselves together.
We gotta play some defense.
Stuck up some defense because it's time for them. You gotta buckle down because they're struggling right now. And the top five, top six teams are going to have to, or they're separating themselves a lot. So you're gonna have to win a lot of games coming up. And losing Aminu and Mo Harkless is pretty bad. But this is gonna be the last show for the 2019 year. It's been a great year between everybody here, Patton Cook, Gabe Jones here. We're here at APSU TV. We're actually in a television studio.
Yeah. If you like it, tell us. We're open to kind of switching things up. Let us know. Feedback is always the best.
Indeed.
Feedback is always wonderful between us three guys here. And so we're just going to try to see what's best for the listeners and the viewers, because you can check us out on Spotify as well. We are on Spotify. You should go check this out. Also, we are on YouTube. You look at APSU TV, just find it. It's going to be awesome content there. But we're going to have to say goodbye for the final episode of 2019. This is Just Talking Sports.